As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
SoCal's Country Station, 95.1 K-Frog. I'm Pepper. This is Spirit of the IE. Last weekend, we learned about Nashville on the Coast, which benefits Honor Flight Southland, which celebrates America's veterans by flying them to Washington, D.C. to visit the memorials and monuments in their honor. Here to tell us more about how we can get involved is Brian Horseman, chairman for Honor Flight Southland, and U.S. Army veteran Corey Shiozaki. Thank you for being here, and Corey, thank you for our freedom.
Thanks for having me, Pepper.
Brian, start by telling us, what is Honor Flight, both nationally and this local chapter?
Sure. And first of all, thank you very much, Pepper, for having me back. Honor Flight National is a veteran organization with a simple mission to fly veterans who served between World War II and the end of Vietnam to Washington, D.C. to be honored at the memorials built for them. And we do this 100% free for the veteran. The veteran doesn't pay a dime for this trip. Honor Flight National started rather small, shortly after the opening of the World War II Memorial in the National Mall of Washington, D.C. in 2004. A retired Air Force captain named Earl Morris was volunteering as a physician's assistant at a VA in Springfield, Ohio. And he had a lot of World War II patients who were in their 80s at that time. And he would ask them, hey, congratulations on your memorial. Do you have plans to go see it? And most of them all would say, yeah, I can't wait to see this memorial. And time would go on and he would see some of these same patients again and would be excited and say, did you get a chance to see your memorial? And they would kind of hem and haw and had one reason or another that they couldn't see it, mostly health or cost related. And it occurred to Earl that many of these World War II veterans who served proudly 60 years prior may never get a chance to see this beautiful memorial that was built in their honor. And so being the amateur pilot that he is, gathered a couple of his pilot friends together, and in May of 2005, flew 12 World War II veterans in 6 single-engine planes to Washington, D.C. for a day to visit the memorial that was built for them. So as you can imagine, word quickly got out that this was happening, and more veterans wanted to take advantage of this. And so as a result of that day in May of 2005, the Honor Flight Network was born, and it has expanded out into 130 hubs across 44 states. And this May will celebrate its 20th anniversary from that first flight back in 2005. And to date, collectively as a network, Honor Flight has flown 300,000 veterans to Washington, D.C. to be honored at their memorials. And then to take a step further, Honor Flight Southland, which covers the L.A., Orange County, and Inland Empire, formed 10 years ago. We will celebrate our 10th anniversary in June. And it was to cover the veterans that are in the Southern California area. And to date, we have flown 17 missions. We'll fly our 18th mission in about 4 weeks. After that 18th mission, we will have successfully taken 670 veterans to Washington, D.C. to be honored. And we have expanded out from originally those first flights were just primarily World War II veterans. As they've been aging, we've expanded out into Korea and Vietnam. Honor Flight Southland takes 36 to 37 veterans per trip, and we do two trips a year in May and then one in September.
What are the eligibility requirements for a veteran to participate in one of these missions?
That's a great question. There is a big misconception amongst the veteran community that you need to have been a combat veteran in order to go on an honor flight. And that is far from true. We are about honoring the service. And we will take any veteran who served between December 7th, 1941, and March 30th, 1975. We honor the service. Everybody played a role in defending our freedom, and we want to honor that.
Now, these veterans don't fly by themselves. Tell us about their guardians.
Yeah, so every veteran takes a guardian with them. Generally, it's a family member, son, daughter, grandchild, niece, nephew, something along those lines. For the veterans that don't have a guardian that goes with them, we have a long list of volunteers who volunteer just for the honor of being a guardian. I got my start. Many people on our team got their start as volunteer guardians. We just wanted to serve. And so we pay a portion of our way to go on this trip for the honor of accompanying a veteran. And the guardian's responsibility is really to ensure that the veteran is having the experience that we want them to have. So they are helping push wheelchairs. They're helping lug luggage off the bottom of the bus. They're making sure the veterans are drinking water, taking their medication. The success of a trip is very dependent on the guardian-veteran relationship. And I could tell you from experience, Pepper, that volunteering as a guardian or serving as a guardian, one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. The bond that you form with your veteran is unlike anything. I've had a World War II veteran that I still stay in touch with, all the way through a Vietnam veteran who's actually one of Corey's friends that I've built great relationships with. Maybe I've mentioned this on the last time I was here, but the veteran that Corey knows had such a big impact on him going on the honor flight, and he's been pitching it to all of his friends. But he'd sent me a photograph one time, what his shelf in his house looks like. And there are three things on that shelf: a picture of his wife, a picture of the moment he and I met that our photographer was able to capture, and a photo book that I put together for him. So the relationship that's formed between the guardian and the veteran is really very special. And then to have some of our veterans that bring a son or a daughter with them, that son or daughter or grandchild is really able to see dad or grandpa in a way they've never seen before. And they're going to see them vulnerable. They're going to hear stories about their service that they've never heard before. And it's guaranteed, Pepper, at dinner, usually Saturday night, guaranteed one of those guardians who was a son or a daughter will always turn to one of us and say, I have never heard that story my dad just told.
How does Honor Flight Southland get its funding?
We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and so we don't receive any government funding whatsoever. We're really at the blessing of very generous individuals, foundations, some corporations. You had Nashville on the coast here recently. They're a big supporter of us. We can't do what we do without the generous support of the public that hears our story, here's Corey's story, and is just compelled to donate to make these flights a success. We keep our administrative expenses very low so that we can make sure that the money that gets donated to Honor Flight goes right back to the veterans to give them the experience that we want to make sure that they have.
The next Honor Flight takes place May 16th through the 18th. Yes. Tell us about this upcoming trip.
We have an amazing trip. And I know I say this every time, but we really have an amazing trip coming up with an amazing group of veterans. On this upcoming trip, we have three World War II veterans, six Korean War veterans, and about 25 Vietnam War veterans. Every one of them is unique. They all have amazing stories to tell. I can't wait for this trip. We get back relatively early on Sunday, which is kind of a first for us. So I'm anticipating a huge welcome home ceremony for these veterans. So it's going to be a wonderful trip, and I can't wait.
Tell us about the experience of this trip. You mentioned the welcome home ceremony. Walk us through the flight out once you're in DC and then coming back.
Sure. So we start very, very early on Friday. We usually have a very early flight. It is guaranteed that no matter what time we tell our veterans to arrive at the airport, and in this case, it's 4 a.m., without fail, they will be there at least an hour before any of us get there. I think a person from two trips ago holds the record. He got there at 10:30 the night before, just because he was so worried that his car might have trouble, even though he had never had trouble with his car before. He just wanted to make sure that nothing was going to stand in his way from going on his trip. So Friday is generally a travel day. We arrive into Baltimore where we stay. We'll have a nice dinner together. And then we start very, very early the next morning on Saturday with the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Two of our veterans that we choose will get the honor of laying the wreath at the tomb with the tomb guard to represent Honor Flight. And then we get, as part of Honor Flight, kind of VIP, not seating, everybody stands, but VIP area, so that we are within a reach away from the tomb guards as they are conducting their inspection. And then a little known secret that most people don't know is that the tomb guards aren't allowed to speak as they're on post. But what they do is they walk past our Honor Flight veterans, they'll shuffle their feet and it'll make a kind of a scraping sound as they walk by our veterans. And that's their way of showing respect for the giants whose shoulders they're standing upon. So that's the Tomb of the Unknown. Then we go on to visit the various memorials. We'll hit the Air Force Memorial, the Marine Memorial. We'll spend quite a bit of time at the World War II and then Korea and Vietnam memorials. Go over and pay our respects over to President Lincoln as well. And then we'll end the day. This time we're changing things up a little bit. We'll end the day at the Army Museum in Virginia. And then we'll have a really nice dinner that evening. And then the next morning, considering on this flight, we have an early flight, so we don't have additional activities scheduled, but we'll fly home, and then the veterans will be treated to an amazing welcome home at the airport. We've got a lot of people coming out to welcome these heroes home from their trip. And this is the welcome home that many, if not most, did not get when they were coming home from serving. And so, especially for our Vietnam-era veterans who did not get treated very well when they got home, we want to undo that 50-year memory of being treated poorly. So we throw out the red carpet for these veterans and we give them the welcome home that they truly deserve.
Would you say this is a life-changing experience for the veterans who go?
Absolutely. It's a life-changing experience for me as well, but definitely for our veterans. Like I mentioned, many of them who were not treated very well upon returning home, to see the outpouring of respect and admiration. And when we arrive in Baltimore, people stand and stop what they're doing and clap as they walk by, to the little boy who will reach his hand out at the memorial to shake a veteran's hand to say thank you for your service. For many of our veterans, that's the first time they're hearing that. And then to hear this from a little guy is very touching. And it also gives the veterans an opportunity to speak amongst themselves, amongst other veterans who have had a similar experience. And it becomes a very therapeutic experience for them, especially our Vietnam War veterans, for many of them who are visiting the Vietnam Wall for the first time. And they're seeing the names, all 58,000 names on that wall. And many of them are brothers and their friends and their family members and somebody they went to school with. And to see the name on the wall and to touch the name, a lot of them, this is the first time that they're really kind of coming to grips with the fact that this is my friend. And the reason why they're on the wall is because they're not coming home and they weren't able to come home. And so for many of our Vietnam veterans, it's a very therapeutic experience to be able to touch the name on the wall and to have that emotional experience. And we as Honor Flight, when we first started taking Vietnam veterans, weren't sure what our role should be as this was happening. And other hubs who had experienced it just told us, take a step back because the brothers will take care of themselves. And they do. And they hold each other and they cry together. And then after they've had that experience, the wound isn't healed, but you could definitely see the healing has started. And then I always say that my favorite place to be on this trip is the hotel bar after we've had that day, because the veterans are now more relaxed and they've had that experience and they've been able to cry with their friends and kind of process what they've been through. And that's when you hear the stories come out and you get to listen to history that you don't read in a book and that you don't learn in a classroom. You get to marinate yourself in the history of this country and the veterans that experienced it. And it's a wonderful experience for them. It's a wonderful experience for me. I get emotional every time. I'm getting choked up now just talking about it. It never gets old. It's something that is life-changing, and our veterans will experience it. The Guardians will experience it. And we as the Honor Flight team experience it every time.
Is Honor Flight also open to female veterans?
Absolutely, yes. Women served, as did men. And so it is open to anybody who served. For our female veterans, we actually do a special stop for them at the Women's Memorial, which is located right outside of the Arlington National Cemetery gate. So we've had a wonderful time with our female veterans. One particular comes to mind, Marjorie Merrill. She was the first full bird colonel in the Air Force during Vietnam. Mm. Very, very nice lady. There is a exhibit at Norton Air Force Base dedicated to her and her service. So yes, men, women, if you served, we will take you.
I'm speaking with Brian Horseman, chairman for Honor Flight Southland, and U.S. Army veteran Corey Shiozaki. Corey, tell us about your military service.
This is an experience that pretty much kept under wraps for about 50 years. It was one of those situations where back when the peak of Vietnam was going on, this is when they instituted and they brought back the draft system, the lottery, in 1969. And ironically, at this time, I was 20 years old. I was in community college, and I knew the Vietnam War was, you know, been going on for quite a while. I didn't understand exactly the reasons why we're there, because it wasn't a declared war. I found out later this Vietnam War was never designed for U.S. victory. You know, they deployed troops there for other reasons other than for our benefit. We were told that it was to fight communism. But many of us understood that there was an underlying reason for us to be there. But it was a very tumultuous period during that time, you know, like in for me, it was 1969 that the lottery began. And also, ironically, I learned for the first time about the Japanese-American incarceration. After Pearl Harbor, mm-hmm. the bombing of Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt at the time signed an executive order that force removed 120,000 Japanese-Americans and their families to 10 different concentration camps, allowing people who were living 100 miles from the coast on the West Coast to be put into these different camps. And I had never heard about that. I mean, my parents were placed in these concentration camps, but they never mentioned it. And when I learned about it in college, I confronted my father about how this happened. Why was it never talked about? And at the same time, you know, I had very mixed feelings about Vietnam War. Do I support it? Do I not support the war? So I took the side of protesting the war to the point where I was involving myself in the rallies, the peace rallies, the marches. Like I said, it was a very tumultuous period of time in the mid-60s where civil rights was becoming a common topic of, you know, in the news, you know, Martin Luther King, the Kennedy assassinations, all that. The people were uprising against the government for their bad decisions for our involvement in Vietnam. So it's hard for me to explain this, but at first I was very vehemently against the war for a couple of reasons. One was the fact that I was in this class in a community college, and my professor, it was a U.S. history class, and he starts off this lecture by saying, in 1941, the Japs bombed Pearl Harbor. And I was in this predominantly white class. In fact, matter of fact, I was the only Asian mm-hmm. and Japanese in the class, and all eyes were focused upon me. And it was such an awkward place to be, you know, just thinking that I have the face of the enemy. And then once again, just like it was in World War II, where the Japanese Americans had the face of the enemy, that, you know, they were put into these concentration camps. So there's a couple things that surrounded my mind about, is this the right thing for me to do? Should I defend a country that so ill-treated the loyal Japanese American families during World War II? Or do I go to Canada? And that notion of defecting to Canada actually entered my mind. And I told my dad I'd protest for what this country did to you and your families. And then also the genocide war of an Asians fighting Asians. That really was upsetting to me. And I told my dad that I was contemplating going to Canada in protest, but he would not have it because Japanese Americans had come from a very proud culture. And one of the things my dad says is, no, if you choose to do that, I will disown you because you'll bring shame to the family. And out of respect for my father, I enlisted in the Army. And that's how I got involved, by going to the military in the very beginning. So the choice was difficult for me to make. But in regards to my dad had a brother, he was drafted out of the camps during the incarceration, and he fought in the famous 442nd Regimental Combat Team in the European Theater, which some may or may not know, but the Japanese Americans that fought in the European Theater were the most highly decorated unit in U.S. military history for its size and length of service. And my uncle was a part of that. He was in E Company, which was the same unit that the late Senator Daniel Inouye from Hawaii was in. So there's a lot of proud moments for me to say that I stand on the shoulders of my Nisei ancestry. And so that was another reason why I served. You know, I went into the Army.
What was your experience in the Army like?
Well, just like all new recruits, they have to go through a basic training. And I was kind of expecting that. I watched a lot of war movies. When I was a kid, I used to play Army, not realizing that this is for real. And so the physical training was probably most difficult, the most challenging, because people, when they get into basic, most of them are out of shape. And boy, they really work you out really, really well. So you have muscles that you didn't know you had muscles. I had, marching to the rifle range for training, it's like a 5-mile hike up and down hills. So my calves got really developed and I put on like 20 pounds, because just, you burn up so many calories by, the physical activity. But after that was the advanced training. They call it EIT, Advanced Individual Training. And I got assigned to an armored reconnaissance, armored infantry unit. So my training was that. And that was an interesting thing. But I think the one particular incident that I remember, and it affected me during that time and even after I got discharged, was the fact that I was trained in combat of arms. I would have been attached to an infantry group. And we had to go through jungle training. And one more time, I am the only Asian face in the whole battalion doing jungle training. And I was singled out by my drill sergeant, picked up behind the back of my shirt, and then was held up in front of 1,000 men. And he said, "Men, this is who you're going to kill. This is what a gook looks like." Mm-hmm. And I was very traumatized by that. And that stuck in my mind for a long time, even after I got out of the service, because once again, that just like my father and his brothers, we had the face of the enemy because people couldn't tell, really, especially in the South. Interesting, though, in the South, it was like Jim Crow time, where they had segregated bathrooms and segregated buses, transportation. And I was sent to Louisville, Kentucky. They had blacks in the back and whites in the front. So when I boarded the bus, I didn't know where to sit, so I sat in the middle. And then when it came to the bathrooms, same thing. Segregated bathrooms, whites and black. I just held on to my pee and waited until I got back to base before. I just didn't want to create any situation for myself. And so that was interesting part of my in military back then.
What was your post-military career?
After I got out? Well, interesting for me, and luckily for me, I was trained in combat. And, we had to train with all the different ordnances, and, all the 50 caliber machine gun, the M60, grenade launcher, everything, all the weapons of war. We were in the particular MOS, military occupational service, that I was supposed to do. And after that moment where I was villainized as having the face of the enemy as a Viet Cong, I pleaded with my battalion commander that I don't mind that I have to serve this country, but if there was any way or any possibility that I can get a change of duty. And fortunately for me, every soldier has what they call a 201 file. And that's a record of your life from the time you're born to all the different schools that you've gone to and any kind of educational background that you had. And it just so happened that I had broadcast experience. I was a broadcast major in college, and my battalion commander looked down at me and says, let me think about this for a moment. And then he raised his head and looked up and says, I think I can get you a reassignment to a broadcast unit. So that was my saving grace, that I didn't have to get deployed to Vietnam. So I served, luckily, stateside duty. And this is the grace of God, you know, that happened. So after that, after I got out of the military, after I was discharged, I continued to pursue my interest in broadcast and filmmaking. And my lifelong goal was to make a film, get into filmmaking, and make a film about the incarceration, basically telling a story that my parents never told me. And that's what I ended up eventually becoming, a motion picture cameraman, and retired from the union after 40 years. But I did get a chance to achieve that goal, and I made a documentary film called The Manzanar Fishing Club. Manzanar was the first of the 10 camps that was erected, and it's in the about 250 miles north of Los Angeles, out in the middle of the desert. And I happened to be interested in that because that was the first camp. So my first documentary was about what had happened at Manzanar. But again, it was basically my lifelong goal is to tell that story of incarceration that my parents never did. And I succeeded in that. So after I got a service, my career was in motion picture and television.
How can we watch that documentary?
It's being streamed right now. If they went to the website, is fearnotrout.com. And the reason why it has that handle, the story is an untold story of incarceration at Manzanar, about incarcerees sneaking out at night under the barbed wire and the noses of armed guards in the towers to go fishing. And they come back. And it was an untold story that people couldn't believe that these guys would sneak out of the camp and put their life at risk. Because people were actually, if they were close to the barbed wire fences, they would be shot at by the guards. So that film is now available on streaming on that website.
How did you hear about Honor Flight Southland?
I became informed about this program about 4 years ago. I was asked by a friend who just happened to find out that, you know, I was in the military, because for 50 years, I never talked about my service. It was mostly because I was still bitter and angry about serving. But this man, his name is Chris Sagawa, he had formulated a group of guys, and they're called the Buddha Head Breakfast Club. Mind you, the term Buddha Head is actually a term of endearment, because that was a term that was used during World War II, when before the 442nd was created, there was a National Guard unit from Hawaii called the 100th Battalion that was deployed first to South Africa. And then later on, they created the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. And because of the two different, they were Japanese Americans by heritage and by ancestry, but the ones from Hawaii felt that the mainland Japanese looked down upon them as like peasants and farmers and that type of thing, country bumpkins. And so they were always constantly feuding. They were always fighting. And Senator Inouye, as I mentioned earlier, was from Hawaii. And he saw that there was this tumultuous relationship between the two Japanese-American sides, one's from Hawaii and one from the mainland. And he took a group of this Hawaiian group, the 100th Battalion, who were called Buddha Heads, and he showed them that there was a concentration camp in Roar, Arkansas, that wanted to have a party for them. So all the incarcerees, like 10,000, and they pulled their money together and they put on a big party for these veterans. And when these veterans arrived at the front gate, they noticed that there was barbed wire and armed guards in the towers. And they couldn't believe that this actually happened to people that looked just like them, who were Japanese Americans. And that was the catalyst that was able to bring these two together as a single fighting unit. You know, they were able to put aside their differences and say, you know, you're like a brother to me. And so they called all the Japanese Americans who were fighting during World War II Buddha Heads. So that's how that happened. Well, anyway, my friend who started this, what he called the Buddha Head Breakfast Club, invited me to come. And one of the members of the Buddha Head Breakfast Club was Don Suihiro, which I find out that later it was Brian Hertzman's. He was the guardian. And he became an advocate for this program. And he told me all about it. And he said, you know, you have to sign up for the Honor Flight. You know, it's a really great experience. And from that, you know, I got really interested. And I put in an application. And I was actually called for last year, but I had injured myself. I had fractured my knee. And so I couldn't go on that. And so there was another person that was involved, Jerry Gamble. And he had said that, yeah, we didn't have one in the fall like they normally do in September. So I got called up this time to go in May, you know. So I'm very happy that it happened.
What are you looking forward to the most about your tour of honor?
I get to pay homage to a high school buddy of mine that when I was in high school, he always wanted to fly. He was a member of the Civil Air Patrol, and he wanted to be a helicopter pilot. And we talked about this during we were still in high school. And I find out that, you know, he was actually a Cobra pilot. Those were attack helicopters. You had the other helicopters that you know, landed the troops, but he was like an escort as a fighter Cobra pilot. And he was shot down. He got his helicopter was hit by a surface air missile and broke off the tail section of the helicopter, and he crashed and burned. And I found out about that he was killed in action. So when I first went to Washington, D.C. in 2012, my film, The Manzanar Fishing Club, actually had a congressional screening. And since I was already in Washington, D.C., I went to the Vietnam Wall to pay homage to him. So I'm looking forward to doing that again and being a part of this exciting event, Honor Flight. I'm just looking so forward to being among other veterans as well, you know, because it's going to be an incredible experience. Even though I know a little bit about it, spoiler alert, I'm still looking forward to it. I know it's going to be one of the greatest experiences in my life.
Knowing what you know about Honor Flight Southland, what would you say to a veteran who hasn't signed up yet or is reluctant to go on a flight?
I would definitely try to convince them that this is something that, because there's a lot of veterans still don't talk about. You know, they haven't come to a point in their life where they have closure to it. And I think this is going to be a huge step in that direction where they can find closure because they'll be among fellow veterans that may have had similar reasons why not to talk about their experiences, you know, serving, especially those who are actually serving in combat. And that were deployed with boots on the ground. It'll be very helpful. It'll be a catharsis for them if I can convince them that they should go. And I think what's encouraging them about it, they'll be going with other veterans who might have had the same thoughts about not talking about their experience in the military.
I've been speaking with Brian Horseman, chairman for Honor Flight Southland, and U.S. Army veteran Corey Shiozaki. How can the community get involved with Honor Flight Southland?
Well, first and foremost, if you are a veteran or you know a veteran, you're related to a veteran who served between December 7th, 1941 and March of 1975, encourage them to sign up and come with us. Get on our list. We will take you on a trip. If you are interested in volunteering and being a part of this amazing organization, you could volunteer as a guardian and you can go along with somebody like Corey on their trip and help them on their trip. You could volunteer to help us logistically plan for the trip or at the airport. And if you really want an amazing experience, come to the airport for our homecoming to welcome these heroes home from their trip. Bring your patriotic signs and flags, get there and just cheer them on. This is the welcome home that they deserve. They should have received this welcome home so many years ago. They've lived with this for so long. You have an opportunity to undo that memory and replace it with something that will stay with them, that they will remember, that will change their life forever. I say that a lot, and I received a letter after one of our trips recently from a veteran that said, had I received the welcome home that I got from my honor flight, if I received that kind of welcome 50 years ago, my life would be different. And so you have an opportunity to experience this and to show our veterans what a grateful nation sounds like by cheering them on, welcoming them back. We arrive home on Sunday, May 18th. We get home early, 12:30 p.m., come out to Southwest Airlines baggage claim at Terminal 1, bring your signs, bring a lot of tissue because they can get very emotional. And, you know, also I mentioned we are a 501c3. We are really at the mercy of donors, donations. If you're looking for a place to spend your tax return, come check out honorflightsouthland.org and make a donation. We would greatly appreciate it. And our veterans, it goes right to them to honor them for their service.
This is a surprise for most of the veterans who are going to be on this trip. So
yeah, the cat's out of the bag on this one. Corey's had a number of friends who've gone on the trip, so he knows what to expect. But yeah.
You also have a mail call.
We do.
For the flight out there.
Yeah.
And we have several elementary schools yes. who have come together and made cards to give to the veterans as part of this trip. I want to thank the Rondo School of Discovery in Norco, Coyote Canyon Elementary in Rancho Cucamonga, Three Rings Ranch Elementary in Beaumont, Vermont Elementary in San Bernardino, and Woodcrest Elementary in Riverside, who classes at these schools have come together and put together cards to just say thank you and have a great flight for the veterans. If there's another school that wants to get involved with that, is it too late for them?
No, they can go to our website. There'll be an address on the website. You can follow us on social media. There'll be plenty of information on where they could send their letters. But it really has a tremendous impact on our veterans, especially to get them from the children. And thank you to those schools for taking the time to fill out these beautiful cards. What people don't realize today is that our veterans didn't have cell phones, and they didn't have email, and they didn't have text messaging. Their only method of communicating with their family and friends was through a handwritten letter. And so to get a handwritten letter from a family member or a friend or just somebody at a school to say, thank you for what you did. Thank you for the freedoms that I get to enjoy today. It means the world to them. And I always say, you know, you could tell when they start cutting onions at the front of the plane, because after mail call, there's a lot of wet eyes that are on the plane. So it means the world to our veterans. We do a good old-fashioned mail call on the plane where we call out the veterans' names. And you could see the excitement as we're calling out names. And anybody who's ever been to summer camp and you wait for the mail call, you sit on the edge of your seat hoping you get a letter. And when you get that letter, it's really very special. And it's so meaningful to the veterans, especially when they get them from children or from a family member. I had a veteran tell me, you know, I always knew my children loved me, but to have an actual handwritten letter from them telling me that is something I will cherish my entire life. And so just the impact that this has on them is just incredible.
Anything else you want us to know?
I'm really excited about this trip. I'm excited about getting to know people like Corey more, getting to hear the stories that they have to tell. I mean, Corey's told an amazing story. And, you know, it really just kind of goes to the spirit of America, to where you have somebody who served his country proudly, despite the fact that he was villainized. We have another gentleman coming on our flight who was actually spent his childhood years in an internment camp. And you would think coming out of that, you would be bitter towards our country. But he put the uniform on of the American service member to defend our freedoms, even though his were taken away from him as a child. Stories like that are why I just love doing this and being able to participate in honoring our veterans is an incredible blessing and a gift that I have. We are all volunteers on Honor Flight Southland. None of us get paid monetarily. I do have a member of my team who reminds me that we don't get paid with money, but we get paid with satisfaction of knowing that we are changing lives and that we are giving our veterans the honor that they should be receiving for defending our country, for defending our freedoms, and for defending our way of life. And all I have to say is thank you, Corey, for serving. Thank you for defending my freedoms so that my generation and my children's generation can enjoy the freedoms that you fought for in any capacity.
I'd like to echo that as well, and also thank you for your candor and openness during this interview. I hope you have a great trip.
I am so looking forward to it, even though it's a bit of a spoiler alert, you know, but I've seen the website, and I also would like to piggyback on that thought about this organization is a nonprofit, and they depend on, you know, people's donations. So if you have the opportunity, you have the ability, this is one of the best organizations I can think of that you can make your donation to.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Pepper.
Thank you, Pepper.